All right, welcome to the first episode of Poets and Lunatics, recording here from Santa Monica Studios. I'm James Pinedo, joined here by Jess Lee Yarbrough and Casey Cuejo. Thanks so much for coming in today, guys. This is going to be fun. So what we are, Poets and Lunatics podcast, and a little introduction to who I am. Again, my name is James Pinedo. I'm a film director living here in Santa Monica. I've been here since 2011. Recently shot my first feature film last year. I've done a lot of DVD series and things like that, small documentaries. Jesse Lee could introduce himself.
Yeah, my name is Jesse Lee Yarbrough. I am a freelance drummer here in LA, among other things. And I actually lived in Phoenix for about 10 years and while I was going to school, made a living there. And just within the past year, had decided to come out to LA and try my hand at the music scene out here. So yeah, I pass it on to Casey.
Thank you, Jesse Lee.
You're welcome.
My name is Casey, and I'm here recording everyone. I'm horrible at these types of things. So
Casey's a producer and our co-host.
Yes.
But what do you do, Casey?
So I work as an audio engineer here in Hollywood, and I went to school out in Boston University after growing up in Miami, Florida, and I decided to study philosophy there. And then I realized that I really wanted to end up working in music, so I came out here and went to school for about 9 months and just learned everything, all the basics to audio engineering, and now I'm working in a studio and here with you guys. So.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much. So what we are going to be doing in this podcast is discussing art and popular culture as artists living and working in Los Angeles. Now, that's a little bit of a broad range, but something in particular that we are is we're all trying to live as men of faith. And so our points of view are going to be coming as someone who is in the mainstream as far as, you know, Casey's out there recording for whatever artist that walks in. I know he's been we're not going to spill the beans on the artist that he's come in, but it's household names that you've heard of. And he's also, so they're out there rapping and doing their flow, and he's out there, you know, on his own trying to live as a man of faith. And it's an interesting dichotomy where things just have to flip sometimes. And the same thing goes for me working in the studios here that I've done here with different films and trying to live as a man of faith. And I know Jesse Lee has also experienced the same thing. So without further ado, that kind of keys up perfectly into what we're going to do. Now, as men of faith, we try not to cuss, but as men, we do sometimes. Now, in this...
He's looking at me when he says that, by the way.
Well, it's not just you. Casey is way better at this than both of we are. Yeah. I mean, good job, Casey. But
except for when alcohol is involved.
Yes. And my weakness is when we're talking about women, but we'll definitely be talking about women in relationships, but I'm going to try not to cuss while we're doing that, and we're going to be unedited here. So if anything slips out, and we're going to go to, you know, great lengths that it won't, but at the same time, there won't be any beeps or bleeps or anything like that. Good. So we're agreed.
That's our disclaimer.
Great. So that really brings us to our first topic that we want to talk about, which is the meaning of words. Now, Casey, Jesse Lee, and I were all sitting at brunch. We were rocking brunch, bro style, and doing anything like a bro style. I mentioned something about our attractive waitress. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but I said, oh, that wench. And both Jesse Lee and Casey were like, why did you insult her? And in my mind, wasn't an insult. I was like, what are you talking about? You look at the definition. Me trying to win an argument, I pulled out my phone and we looked at the definition, and it's just a young girl in the Webster's Dictionary app. But you look at where the word came from, and it comes from Old English word wenchel, which means prostitute. And so they were like, see?
How dare you, James? How dare you call a woman a prostitute?
And that brings us exactly to the meaning of words. And when we say things in art or in you know, in film, which is a part of art, if it's done properly. We can get to that later, though. How different phonetics, and when you put words together, they mean more than what is just on paper, or if it's just the base definition of that. No one did that better than J.R.R. Tolkien, Lord of the Rings. You know, he was a scholarly man who could come up with his own languages and came up with many. But beyond that, it was his own, the sounds of each word. So every time I mispronounce the Silmarillion, which I've done many times, I'm sure he's rolling over in his grave, and some Tolkien fanatics have thrown things at me for that. But I think our first topic here, the meaning of words and how that applies with what we do on a daily basis in our line of work. And how does that, like, for example, Casey, when you're talking to these artists, is there an appreciation that you think that, you know, for what they're saying that you get, that gets across to you, or?
In what they're trying to say sometimes, yeah, absolutely. Is that what you mean? An appreciation for what they're saying?
Well, first of all, can you find that same level of appreciation for, like, the phonetics of the word, or the definitions, or, like, does that come through in mainstream music today?
I think it does sometimes, and I think that actually that's part of what rap can bring to music, is a lot of kind of like form follows function kind of thing, you know? I always think of that a lot, actually, when I'm listening to the raps. So there's a lot of, like, phonetics that will come out when you're angry or something, and you get a lot of puss and puss, you know, plosives that are going to affect you differently than some nicer words would. That's what, you know, nicer words might make you feel a little bit calmer. And people do use that, but maybe not to the extent that Tolkien did.
Yeah, Tolkien would jump in and he would be, I think it was the ICE syllable. Like, if anything that he wanted to do with softness or something like that, it would always end with a ice or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, he would break it down to the actual, the letters coming together meant something beyond that. So if he was going to come up with a name, the actual prefix would tell you who this person was. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's something that might be lost today.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like I've talked to people who do appreciate it. We all three of us sitting here have a good friend, and he is a high school teacher, but he's also a rapper. And I remember talking with him one day. I remember looking to do a project with him, and
just one of the same. Who's this guy?
Oh, we're talking about Nate.
Nate, last name?
What is his last name?
Broguier.
So Nate, you guys can look him up online. Go ahead.
Anyway, Nate was talking to me about, I asked him to put some lyrics together for a track that I was working on. And he was just talking about that very thing. He's like, well, you know, he was talking to me about the interpretation of the song, and then what he wanted to do with the actual meaning of the lyrics. And then so devoting, almost like he was devoting one verse more to the meaning of the lyrics, and then he wanted to do another one that just had to do more with the actual sounds of the lyrics, which I thought was really cool.
How would he do that? Like, I can give, like, specific thoughts of how I've tried to do it or how Tolkien did it, but I'm curious.
And in rap music specifically, a lot of it has to do with rhythm. How many syllables you fit into beats A, B, and C, you know. And are they disjunct? Are the rhymes lining up right on the beat, or are they sort of floating around the beat, not always hitting? Mm-hmm. So I think of Eminem as somebody who's like a master of that. He sort of incorporates of, I don't know how much theoretical knowledge he has in music, but what a musician.
Why don't we pull up an Eminem? Like To Kill a Mockingbird or something like that, or
All right. Well, Casey's working on that. That's pretty cool. Oh, we can do that. Anyway, what Casey was saying about the sound of the words. Also, somebody who I feel like, not that this is modern pop culture, but Shakespeare was like a master of this.
Oh, tell me about it.
I would say even more than, as much as I love Tolkien, more than Tolkien, just because
Tolkien borrowed and stole a lot from
If you look at Shakespeare's vocabulary, I think if you count up all the words he uses in all of his plays and everything, average human vocabulary, I think it's, I remember hearing from a literist whose name I can't recall right now, but I think he said 16,000 words is what most of us kind of just have in our word bank in our head that we could use at any given time. And if you count up all of the words used in all Shakespeare plays, there's about 60,000. So he's got more than three or four times the average person's. Yeah. So anyway, but if you look at the words when he describes people, a lot of them weren't even real words. He just made up a word, and it would sound like
the character. And people would get it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly. If it was like a sly, sneaky character, he'd make up a word that sounded like a sly, sneaky kind of, you know. Anyway, oh, looks like Casey's got Eminem queued up. So let's take a listen.
Yeah. I know sometimes things may not always make sense to you right now. But hey, what daddy always tell you, straighten up, little soldier. Stiffen up that upper lip. What you crying about? You got me. Haley, I know you miss your mom, and I know you miss your dad when I'm gone, but I'm trying to give you the life that I never had. I can see you sad, even when you smile, even when you laugh. I can see it in your eyes, deep inside you wanna cry, cause you're scared. I ain't there, daddy's with you in your prayers. No more crying, wipe them tears. Daddy's here, no more nightmares. We gon' pull together through it, we gon' do it. Laney uncle's crazy, ain't he? Yeah, but he loves you, girl, and you better know it. World we got in this world, when it spins, when it swirls, when it whirls, when it twirls. Two little beautiful girls, looking puzzled in it. Days. I know it's confusing you. Daddy's always on the move. Mama's always on the news. I try to keep you sheltered from it, but somehow it seems the harder that I try to do that, the more it backfires on me.
I love that guy.
Yeah, so good. I want to point out a couple things that I just heard. You know, the first, the opening was pretty slower. I mean, slow pacing. And then when I get into the verse, there's a little bit more happening. And then there's a lyric. Go to the Casey, the swirls and the. Let me read that back. I thought that this a little further. It's just really cool hearing the sound of the actual words right here. Where we all got in this world when it spins, when it swirls, when it whirls, when it twirls. Two yeah. little beautiful girls. That's clearly about the sound of the word. I mean, obviously there's a meaning there too, but just the actual sound.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Just saying whirls kind of sounds like you're flowing down.
Exactly. He's creating spiral. He's creating an image in the audience's mind through, well, the, he took a meaning of a word, and so the definition swirls, so we're already thinking about something. Mm-hmm. And then he came back and he uses a rhyme on the swirl, so it, we get this idea of just a vertex going around, or a little whirlpool, and it works perfectly for shooting that image, and the audience gets it like that.
And he even starts off saying, "We're all we got in this world," as if we're like already spinning down this vortex because the world is so chaotic, anyways. Mm-hmm. And all we have is each other.
It's pretty cool.
Eminem's a deep guy.
He really is.
He's a smart man.
If Eminem, if you're listening to our podcast, we would just like to take this moment to say thank you for your art.
Well, here's the amazing thing about Eminem, too, is that he is able to cross lines, you know, white, black, or and people that don't listen to rap that will listen to him. Uh-huh. People that don't use the amount of profanity that he uses generally, but they'll still listen to Eminem. Uh-huh. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I don't think there's many other artists that you can point to, like even outside of music, in film or in anything.
Yep.
Do you have any ideas? What is his secret? Like, how does he do that? Beyond that he's good.
Well, I think he touches on the human experience. I remember hearing an interview. I don't remember who it was with. Man, all my names are out of my head. But somebody had asked him, What makes it, like, why are you so marketable? Why are you as big as you are? You know, why do you hit so well with, and basically like what you're talking about. And it has to do with the family. And what he said was, because I relate to an entire generation of kids whose fathers walked out on them. Mm-hmm. That's the reason why. That's what
and
he would say.
And that's censored, guys. Just so you know, that he didn't say it just like that. But
it's paraphrased.
We're trying not to. Yes, you refer to the beginning of the podcast. But go ahead.
Right. Anyway, I just thought that was very interesting. That was his answer to your question right now.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a whole generation that felt that, and I mean. It kind of ties into that. I don't think there's much of an understanding of manhood or fatherhood. You can see that a lot with a breakdown of gender definitions and things like that. But there's a very real victim there, mm-hmm. and that is the children that are growing up without their dad. Mm-hmm. You know, not to be too negative though, because there's the other side that. People that did grow up without their dads are, you know, you can sense Eminem trying there mm-hmm. in that song talking about how he's trying to be there for his children. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I was blessed that my dad was a big part of my childhood, but I know that people that didn't have that grow up are just motivated to be there for their children. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's
pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, yeah, there's a lot of good happening, and you can see that here in Hollywood.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's the other side. But in any case, speaking of seeing stuff in Hollywood, something that's really interesting a lot of the time is people that come here for the first time are in a little bit of a shock about how business is run here in Los Angeles. How it's really there's a personal relationship currency that is. I mean, sure, if you come in with money, people will want to be in a relationship with you. That's fine. But it's this circle that's built upon trust. And that trust is so much, you look at it, directors who will only work with the same people over and over again. And I do the same thing a lot of the time. There is a set number of people that, okay, if they're anywhere in the world, it doesn't matter to me. I want to work with them. I'll call them and be like, hey, can you drop what you're doing? I've got this. And you know, sometimes they will. A lot of time they will. I'm lucky and blessed like that. But it's funny when I find myself doing these things that get me so irritated about other people because I can't get into their circle because it's so closed. Mm-hmm. Have you guys experienced that kind of personal relationship currency that really runs Hollywood?
In some ways, yes, I have. That is something that I think is very... in the music realm, it's interesting. I think it would take a little bit longer to establish credibility in like the film world. Whereas a musician, if I show up at a jam session and I try to play some drums, people can hear me in one night and know whether I'm legit or not. They can hear me for 30 seconds, you know, and be like, okay, this guy's, whereas with the film world, you know, you have to squeeze your way into.
Yeah, I'm a film producer.
Yeah.
No, really. Really.
So, but no, I have noticed that like people, yeah, like there's people like to work with who they like to work with. That's all it comes down to. And I think I've noticed a little bit of willingness on the people who aren't in those circles yet. That's something that I have realized is when I got here, you know, I mean, Casey, you know, feel like Casey and I started working on a little bit of stuff, and basically most of the people who weren't in those tighter circles were like really willing to like put themselves out there, and so it was a little easier in some senses because the people on the outside of those circles almost like want to create their own circles. But yeah,
which they won't let people into.
Yeah. So I don't know, I've experienced both sides of it, so I can't give a definitive statement on that.
And from what I've seen as far as artists and engineers goes, it's completely if they like them, because that's in the studio environment.
Yeah, I was going to say, you have that.
Yeah, as long as the engineer is at a certain level that's good enough to record and, you know, put some delays on the vocal or whatever it is, stack some harmonies, then the artist, if
there's a plateau, is what you're saying.
Then they're going to choose them over somebody who might be way better than the person that they vibe with. Yeah.
So you run into that personal relationship currency a lot then?
Every like since I'm based in out of a studio, I work for a specific producer, and his different artists come in all the time. So I'm seeing multiple types of artists come through, and a lot of times they'll bring an engineer with them. And every time that engineer is like one of their best friends, one of the artist's best friends. They've built a rapport.
Yeah.
And
yeah, that's exactly my experience that that I have, you know, my DP that, you know, when I shoot something, oh yeah, he's my DP, and he'll get mad at me if I don't, at least, I mean, he was shooting last project. Two projects ago, he was shooting a documentary down in the South Pole, and he was mad that I didn't, you know, I didn't give him the, like, why didn't you even tell me you were working this thing? I was like, you're in the South Pole. Well, I would have come. Come on. What's the matter with you?
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. No.
Because. Right there.
DPs are also divas, but anyway.
Let's talk about that. Tell us how you really feel.
No, okay, we'll give you another rant when we talk about DPs. Okay, I can't tell you one. Here's all you need to know about DPs for right now.
What is a DP?
He's a director of photography.
Okay.
So he would be the man who's in charge of the image that is captured on camera. So how it's lit, the framing of it, and, you know, everything he does goes through the director. There has to be a huge amount of trust there. You know, if you have a working knowledge, and most directors, the DPs that they work with, they have it. You know, they have that that shorthand that they're able to be on the same wavelength without having to use too many words. But in any case, DPs.
Can I interject there?
Sure.
What you just described, I think, has so much to do with the same thing that we're talking about, and just whether you can connect with a person. I think that right there kind of sums up a lot of that.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, there's a good, I think there is a good reason for why we have a personal relationship, you know, an industry built on personal relationships more than banking or a law or anything, any other type of industries, or power, oil and gas, because a lot of what we have to do is not found in any book. Mm-hmm. You know, we work a lot on instinct. You know, when I'm prepping for a film shoot, I do all the legwork. You know, we've planned every shot. We know everything that we can do. But at the same time, when I'm on a set, it's just, I have to make 50 decisions based upon not being able to think about it. It's just like, okay, this is the right one. This is the right one. This is the right one. And so, yeah, it's in order to have a crew gathered around us that's able to work with that, yeah, there is a good reason why we have trust. And we have to make decisions and build people, build teams based on that trust, that background knowledge that we have. Even if it is painful for someone trying to break into the industry, you know, someone who is on the young side like we all are, trying to do great things with their art. But in any case, about the DP, I have a question for both of you. This will answer your question about DPs. What is the difference between a director of photography, a DP, and God?
Well, they don't know everything. Even though they act like they do, maybe.
Is it the light?
Here it is. God doesn't think he's a DP.
Yes.
That's the only difference.
There you go.
So that's all you need to know about DPs. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you can say this because you're friends with your DP, right? Because he's going to be listening.
Because I have done work as a DP, so yes, I can say this. And my best buddy, who's a DP, shout out to Ricardo Palomares. He would just say yes. He would agree. He was like, yeah, God doesn't think that he's a DP.
Yeah.
He knows better. He's all knowing.
Right.
Okay. One more point, and we're running out of time, but I really wanted to talk about was music. Given that you two guys come from a musical background that's way beyond me, although I was a music minor back in college. and I know you have a lot to say, so I'll jump out of there. What is the meaning? What is music's meaning? What is its point?
What is its point? That's a really good question.
It's
that's
a hard one to discuss when you're running out of time.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, we can run over if you need to.
Okay. All right. My definition for what music is, I mean, you could take, if you're looking at the definition of art, you know, people have different ways they describe art. Well, that's a little bit broad. Well, let me stick with music is like, to me, this is one guy's opinion.
That's okay. This is three guys' opinion.
Typically, I'm not going to say it's always this. It's sort of sounds organized in time, and most music consists of melody, harmony, and rhythm. But what is the point of it? It goes a lot further beyond, you know, just the pure harmonics, you know, reverberating through the air.
Right.
So, definition of music. Casey, what is your definition of music?
Well, I mean, not just definition, but meaning, point.
Right.
I think you got a definition. You got a good definition. An organized sound in time and rhythm.
Yeah. I mean, I think I have fallen into this, and it's something that a lot of the general population believes music is now, which is just the expression of oneself, one's experience of the world. And I think that it can be partially that, absolutely, because we're people who create music are putting their own selves into that art, right? So it is coming from their experience, but it's a lot more than that. When you look at music and you take the rhythm and the harmonies and the melodies, which Jesse, I know you know a lot about, maybe you can give some insight, then I kind of start to see like how it is different parts coming together to create this beautiful order and pleasing sound, you know, and hopefully that lifts you up. And
so that's an important part.
Makes you look at the world in a better way. I think that's closer to what art in general is for.
Well, what about songs that are about rape and things like that?
Sure.
Can I comment on this?
Yeah, can I just...
My point
of saying that all those different parts are coming together to create a song is kind of like how it represents God, like, and his... the body of Christ, kind of. So all the different people have so many different talents that are all coming together to do God's work, right?
Yeah.
And so if you look at music or art in general, it kind of represents that a little bit.
I think there's a part that can, unless, I mean, music specifically, because you're talking about groups of people working together.
Yeah,
single artist, maybe or maybe not.
Right.
True, but I mean, we don't really do that singular art, any three of us, so we can't really comment upon that as much.
Well, I'm talking more about just a song in and of itself.
Yeah.
And how there's the rhythm.
Oh, okay. You're not talking about... Okay, yeah.
Yeah, but that's a good point, too. In order to create music, you do need multiple people coming together, too. Right. So
you would break... So you're saying, like, the different elements, like, every... Like, the different voices, the different... The rhythms, harmonies... It's a parable, basically, for the body of Christ. It's an example of something that we see.
Yeah. Because I think in order to define music, you have to take a step back and say, well... Music is an art, right?
Yeah.
Well, maybe not. I don't know. Maybe some listeners would like to disagree.
Right.
So what is art really?
This is where
This is where maybe Luis, what's his full name?
Luis Sanchez
might have some insight, but maybe another time.
Yeah, he's our resident know-it-all audience.
Right.
But we'll have to ask him about that next time. Luis.
I was actually, I was listening to a guy before. And he was talking about, his name is Father Basil Mortz, great philosopher. And he was talking about arts in that he defined different types of arts. You have like hard, like basically, how did he say it? There's servile and there is fine arts, servile arts and fine arts. And fine arts, he discussed as, using Latin, he said, what was it? I can't remember the. Well, actually, no. I think I have it written down on my phone. Here it is. Rectoratio facto vilio.
Hey, watch your mouth.
Facto. So,
what does that mean?
It means right reason in making things.
Okay.
Right? So, whereas things like prudence, like edification for the soul in acts that we do, are right reason in doing things, the arts are right reason in making things or creating things. So, and there's a whole philosophical discussion behind that, but we won't go into that. But goes to say, you know, you could think of anything as an art. Farming is an art. Carpentry is an art. It's right reason in making things, right? It's for some good end. Well, the thing with the fine arts is that they don't have a physical, tangible end. I mean, you could argue, okay, a painting has a physical, tangible end, but the point of the painting is not to have... Like, the point of a chair is to sit on, you know? It has some sort of function. With the fine arts, there's no end that is functional. It's specifically to predispose man's soul to something else. You know, and traditionally it was to, predispose man's soul to truth, goodness, and beauty, yeah. You know? So Father Basil Nortz gives the examples of, you know... You can think of like sculptures made, you know, these statues of you know, you think of these amazing artists. Who did the...
Michelangelo?
Yeah, I was thinking actually Raphael.
Okay.
The Pietà. So
any arts, one of the Ninja Turtles.
Yeah. Arts, yeah, exactly. Arts, they imitate nature in some form, right? So... They imitate, like, a natural thing. So the Pietà, for example, shows Mary holding the body of Jesus, and it's supposed to give the human soul some sort of experience and predispose it. It doesn't necessarily teach it prudence or virtue or anything like that, but it's supposed to help predispose your soul to that so that when you learn the logic of it, it all fits together. So you have the inspiration from the art and the logic side from wherever you go, philosophy, you know. Theology, things like that. So anyway, so arts, being that they don't have a concrete end, are supposed to help dispose a man's soul to be able to shape a man's soul. This is the, you know,
beautiful
traditional, you know, definition that what he used, you know, all the philosophers, Plato and Aristotle and things like that. In fact, it's actually that some of the old philosophers didn't like artists and poets and things like that, and I think it was Plato that... he talked about how they could sort of mess with a human's emotions and like toy with a person if they're so when you talk about songs,
there's nothing more powerful than music.
So you know, my brother would give the definition that art has to be transcendent. It's a little vague, but it's kind of getting there. And I think, Casey, you were talking about it, you know, art should impact people emotionally. That's also getting there,
right?
But I think in the end, yeah, if it predisposes a man's soul to truth, goodness, or beauty, we can say that it's on the right track. There's obviously a modern trend in like the 20th century to make things deliberately ugly, which I don't necessarily understand. And it kind of leaves man's soul in the gutter in ways. But anyway, so that's art. If we go to music, definition of music... Music can't imitate nature because it's pure sound waves. It can't, you know, with a painting, you can paint a sky, you know, or a sunset. Yeah. You can paint a sky. It's just blue. So when it comes to music, those are things that just purely the sounds themselves can go straight into your ear and somehow affect you with rhythm, harmony, or melody. They will affect your concupiscible appetite in some way.
When you're speaking, it really drives home the point to me that artists, especially modern artists, with all the art that's floating around, and you know, we're constantly inundated with it as a consumer, but artists have a huge task to be properly formed.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
In philosophy, yeah. and because they need to know mm-hmm. what they're saying and how they're mm-hmm. affecting others, yeah. especially if they're trying to do like we're doing, you know, yeah. do something for the good. Mm-hmm. But in any case, we'll have to pick this up next time.
There's so many ways we could go with that.
Yeah, there really is.
Yeah, well, we'll pick it up.
Going to rant there.
No, that's great. Hey, could you actually, do you know that the priest's, who we spell out for our audience, the last name? Because it's kind of a...
Nortz. Father Basil Nortz, N-O-R-T-Z, I believe is how you spell it.
Yeah.
And he's got a great, it's a 3-CD set called Music and Morality. And I can come back with more research on that next week to shed a little more light if you'd like. If it's a point of interest.
Yeah, I just Googled. It's Basil Nortz, Father Basil Nortz, N-O-R-T-Z, if you want to look him up. All right, so I'm James Pinedo.
Are we gonna ask Gabe?
I think we'll have to get to Gabe next week. I apologize. Yeah. So we're going over. We'll do better next time. We'll get to our guests, I'm sure they'll understand. Or we can get off the air and then pretend to ask them a question on the air so they'll never know. All right, so I'm James Pinedo.
I'm Jesse Lee Yarbrough.
I'm Casey Quayo.
Producer, nobody does it better, Casey Quayo. And thanks, Jesse. And we'll see you guys next time on Poets and Lunatics.